Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. I'm Ray Bohax from the Farm Machinery Digest, and I want to welcome you today to my show, this week's show, and I want to thank you for all for listening. And if you do have the opportunity, please go to my website, www.farmmachinerydigest.com, because there are a lot of valuable technical articles there that I feel, well, not I feel, I know will bring you good information to help you make your farm or ranch operation more profitable. And I do want to thank you again for tuning in and for listening and for taking an hour of your time each week to listen to this dryland farmer from New Jersey, from Cat Swamp Road. Hey, you don't get much more hillbilly than that, right? Cat Swamp Road. So hopefully things are going well, as I always wish you each week on your farm or ranch operation and in your life. And we're already in August, right? So God willing, your crops are growing well. It's amazing how, you know, you could see some pictures of corn and other crops that the fields were so wet that the guys couldn't get in the field and caused compaction and caused everything, and all the issues that come along with it. Now it seems in many parts of the country that the water is shut off, and now the crops are struggling. So it's really been a paradox this year with everything that's going on. But, you know, and believe me, I'm preaching to the choir, so I know that. And oftentimes in life, specifically with a wet year, then we know we get in the field when we shouldn't get in the field, and then the rain shuts off and we have that stagnated root growth that can't go through that compaction that we caused. And once the water shuts off, there's plenty of moisture below that compaction and the plant can't get to it. So we're hoping for some rain to not only loosen up that soil, but to be able to feed those roots. And it's a rough deal. I mean, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So I certainly understand that. And I'm not saying that I didn't make mistakes or make decisions, I should say. I don't think anybody made any mistakes this year. It was just the better of the evils. So hopefully, God willing, we get through that and you have a bountiful harvest. It's a little bit too early for harvest, right, in most instances. But we will hopefully be start harvesting our sweet corn right after the Agro Expo. And I've been telling you about that, and this is probably going to be the last time that I can tell you about the Agro Expo and try to make a strong business case, because that's what really it's about. It's about business, and the Agro Expo is about learning. And in any business, no matter what you are in, whether you're a farmer, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're in a trucking business, manufacturing, what have you, that education is the key. And that is what the Agro Expo is about. And that is being held August 13th and 14th. When I started telling you about that, that seemed so far away, but it's only about a week from when you'd be listening to this. So 13th and 14th in St. John's, Michigan, and that is a 100% educational event. And you could have a great time there, I'm not going to say that, but go there for education. Go there to learn. Go there to discover things that can make your farm or ranch operation more profitable. And, you know, the thing is that I do want to emphasize that, and for people that have just coming on board, is that we have such an eclectic audience, and the Agro Expo, like so, unlike so many other field days or events, is not just talking about row crops. It is sponsored by the Agro Liquid Corporation, and they are well entrenched in the nutrition needs and high efficiency nutrition. And as the hot rod farmer, that's what I like, because, you know, if you look at any engine, if you look at an engine that's turbocharged or supercharged, that's to increase what's called the volumetric efficiency. And I did a podcast on that a while back. I did a show. You could look at my archives or any of the hosting sites that feature my podcast, which are quite many, thank God. But anyway, volumetric efficiency, it's filling the cylinder the most. You know, you could have a big cubic inch engine, and if it's only partially filling the cylinders, the end result is going to be that amount of power. The amount of cylinder fill is going to be in lockstep and of the potential power that engine can make. And when it comes to fertility on the farm, is that the efficiency of the fertilizer, the all of the efficiencies that come together are going to determine the yield that that particular crop has. And I know in my particular instance, because we raised sweet corn back in 2016, we switched to a agro liquid program, and I have dramatically not only increased my yield, but I have dramatically increased the drought tolerance, or the stress, I should say, or didn't increase the stress, decrease the stress, right? That's really good, right? We increase the stress. I guess what I'm trying to say to you is that I made my crop more drought tolerant and stress tolerant than it was before with the traditional dry or other liquid fertilizer fertility program. But more importantly for me, I look at marketable ears, and when you deal with the consumer right over the counter and dealing with the fresh market and farmers market sweet corn business, is that the taste of the product comes into play dramatically. You could have a beautiful ear of corn. It could be picture perfect. It could be gorgeous. You could put it on the cover of a seed catalog, but if it doesn't have the taste, that you're not going to retain that customer. And the reason why I'm saying this to you is that in the grain business, we use a metric of qualifying the quality of the grain. But when you're dealing with the vegetable market, not only is the appearance gets you in the door. So it's like, you know, going for a job and having a nice resume and a suit and tie on, depending what type of job it is. Say, I went to this school, these are my old credentials. Then you come in there metaphorically like a general with all different badges, medals on your lapel. But once you open your mouth, that's where the rubber meets the road. The college education, the resume, the suit and tie, or whatever it may be, that only gets you the interview. Well, in the vegetable business, the appearance of the crop gets you the sale. All right, somebody comes and looks at your tomatoes, your ear of corn, your strawberries, what have you. They bring that home, and it does not have a good taste. Or so many times today, no taste. It's not that it's bad, it's got no taste, but it looks beautiful, then your business is going to suffer. And what I have found is through education in nutrition, I always say I'm not an agronomist, but I have learned empirically through practical knowledge, through practical experience, that as far as the vegetable crop is concerned, is that the nutrients are key to bringing taste out into that product, into that fruit, whether it's a tomato, whether it's a strawberry, in my particular instance, sweet corn. And that is one of the things, is that when you go to an event like the Agro Expo, yes, you could go there and find out how to increase your wheat production, your soybean, your grain, your milo, what have you, but there's also other areas to explore. And, you know, I get frustrated because I go to a lot of field days, and they're all talking about field corn, and they're talking about soybeans, and that's great. I mean, nothing I learned from it. Education is never lost. Whatever you learn that you can apply, but there's nothing, there's no meat and potatoes there that I could get into as a vegetable grower. But at the Agro Expo, I can. I could talk about bricks value in a corn plant. I could talk about different things, and you could also, and the person next next to me could have not a care about that, and he's learning about wheat, or he's learning about soybeans or corn, or he's learning about transition of the farm, which is going to be there. He's learning about sprayer technology. So it is such an eclectic event that there's something there for everyone, and there is more than something there because there are other part aspects of agriculture. You know, you're a cattleman. You're interested in your pasture health. You're interested in the nutrition of your grain, or not your grain, your hay, all right, in your pasture that your livestock, your cows are eating, right? Is that, you know, you go to other events, they're great, not taking anything away from it. But who's really talking about pasture fertility? Who's talking about nutrients? All right, I know in the dairy industry, we study a lot. They study that. I'm not in that industry, but they study that about all of the nutritional content that the cow is absorbing. But the disconnect seems to be is that, yeah, your nutritionist tells you the cow needs this, but no one's telling you how to get that out of your crop, your hay, or your pasture land in the ground. So that's great. I need this, but how do I get there? The Agro Expo is what it's about. So listen, please come. I will be there. Not that's no reason for you to come. It's probably for a reason for you not to come. But I will be there, and I am looking forward to it, and I have made a whole list of questions that I want to ask the experts at the Agro Expo. So that, and whenever I go to an event, I try to just make some questions up before I go to it, and then obviously other things happen there, and it prompts other questions. But I like to go with some pointed questions that I could seek out the right person and get an education, and that's what it's all about. 100%, it's about education. And if you stop learning, you stop living. And if you stop learning, your farm operation or your ranch or your orchard or your vineyard is going to stop not living, but stop growing. And I don't mean physically plant growing. I mean the growth in your business model. So please check it out. It's www.theagroexpo.com. Now, we also have an interesting special delivery letter today. And as you know, special delivery is at the end of the show, and it's brought to us by Firestone. And I say it's brought to us because it's brought to me also by Firestone Ag. And I had a person contact me through the Farm and Rural Ag Network, and they did not sign their name, which is fine. It just says FRAN, Farm and Rural Ag Administration, so I don't know where it actually originated, but that makes no difference. And the person was blessed. They just purchased a brand new 2019 Ram 2500, and they have some questions about braking in the engine properly. So that is going to be at the end of the show, and the Farm and Rural Ag Network also is one of the podcast hosting sites that host Idle Chatter. So you actually may be listening to it there right now, or you may be on the Global Ag Network or Google Play or iTunes or whatever it may be where the show is. So I appreciate you listening, and I'm looking forward to discussing that with you and giving that person the proper answer as when we get there. You know, what today's show is going to be about is that I'm going to talk about non-essential, essential equipment. And that may sound confusing. What's non-essential, essential equipment? Well, basically, I'm using that term to identify what I would call support equipment. And what support equipment is, let's say like a seed tender, a farm truck, a pickup truck, a semi that hauls grain, or anything in an ATV or a UTV. And what I want to discuss today is how to make non-essential, essential equipment last for a long time. And that may not catch your fancy, so I'm going to ask you to bear with me, because there's a method to my madness. And I've basically said this before on the show. There is nothing and that I could think of, and maybe as the show, God willing, progresses and goes on for many years, that will change slightly, or maybe there'll be an opportunity. But there's nothing that I am ever going to present to you through Idle Chatter that is going to make you a nickel. So I'm not about making you money. because what makes you money is your core business. If your core business is poultry, if your core business is grain, vegetables, vineyard, rice, cotton, whatever it is, that's where you generate your revenue. I am about keeping more of that revenue. And I think that that's something that we often lose sight of. And it's not what you make, it is what you keep is going to determine the financial health of your operation. So I'm not going to be able to come and tell you how to grow better cotton. I'm not going to be able to tell you how to grow more bushels per acre of certain things. I'm not going to tell you how to increase or decrease the disease in your orchard. But what I am going to do is I am going to tell you how to find efficiencies with your equipment so I like to use the term, in your farm shop, all right, that will allow you to not spend an excessive amount of money on repairs, and also that you will not have the downtime or the failures, which are both very costly in dollars in your checkbook, but more importantly, are more costly in your operation as far as being time sensitive. And I said this, you know, time and time again, you need to get in the field, you need to plant, and obviously we know that the planting window is more critical in most applications than the harvest window. But the harvest window in some with a vegetable crop, the harvest window is actually possibly even more critical than the planting window. I'm a sweet corn guy. Keep bringing that up, right? I'm a sweet corn guy. I have a certain small amount of time to get that product when it's at its peak or approaching its peak out of the field and into the marketplace. All right? I mean, nobody wants to buy old sweet corn that the sugar turned to starch and the husks are all dry. If you're a tomato guy, you're a vegetable guy, you're a cucumber guy, yeah, maybe a cucumber has a little bit more wiggle room than a tomato, but you know, it's not like a row crop guy that's going to take corn and beans and put it in a bin and possibly dry it or condition it or what have you and then wait for the market to respond. All right, when you're so in a lot of parts of agriculture, is that you have to get that product out of the field and you have to get that to the marketplace for you to be able to get a premium for it, and it very quickly goes from a premium price to dumping it in the woods. And believe me, I know that. I mean, you have tomatoes that are going bad. You have corn that's already gotten a couple of days old, sweet corn, all right, or cucumbers or peppers or strawberries, anything, all right, anything. It's instead of going into the marketplace and cashing a check, it's going into the hedgerow, all right, and building organic matter for next year in the hedgerow. So the things are time sensitive, and what I want to do with my whole mission of this show and my website is to bring efficiencies to you that will show you how to make your equipment more reliable, because I always say farm equipment is akin to emergency equipment. It needs to run where it needs to run, and make it more reliable, and to have your cost greatly reduced, your operating cost and your cost of ownership. And that is really what I'm going to focus on today, is the non-essential, essential pieces of equipment on the farm. And I'm going to reference it probably off of a pickup truck. Every farm, and if you have an operation of any magnitude, we only have one pickup truck, all right, because we're a small Mickey Mouse operation. I'm not like you guys, 10,000 acres and everything. So, the thing is, I only have one truck, but most operations of any consequence have many, 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 many support vehicles. Like I said, it could be UTV, ATV, pickup truck, but I'm going to focus my discussion and the examples I give you on a pickup truck, and because it'll be easier for me to represent that audibly through voice only, without charts like a PowerPoint for you to see something, all right? So my talk is going to be based upon that. But do not just think pickup truck. Think everything on your farm. So now, that's what we're about, right? Keeping more of the money that your cash crop, whatever it may be, poultry, corn, beans, Milo, brings in. Now, The other thing that I want to talk to you about is a mindset as far as your equipment is concerned. Look, we all love new stuff. I'm not going to deny that. But you really need to, and I think one of the pitfalls, and I've mentioned this before, one of the pitfalls of the agricultural community is that we're too entrenched in agriculture. And I don't mean that as far as our business is concerned. What I'm talking about is you need to look outside often, look outside your own community for thoughts and for ideas of how other businesses do things. And, you know, that is... It's not going to be one-to-one. So you can't look at a guy who's in a trucking business and take 100% of his thought process and bring it to your farm that you have a two or three older semis to haul grain. But you may take one aspect of that out of that particular business model and modify it to fine-tune your business model, or more often, to modify your thought process. And most of these things are a thought process more than an action. And if you were to look, since I mentioned trucking business, is that if you look at the trucking industry, for a good part, all of their measurement scales, everything they look at is what they call CPM, cost per mile. When we're looking at agriculture, and we're looking at crops, lots of times we'll talk of cost per acre or cost per bushel. So if we're looking to do a fungicide treatment, or we're looking to add more fertility, and we're looking for a return on investment, so on ROI, we put a fungicide on, it costs us $2 an acre, we're hoping to get $4 per acre back, or $5 per acre back. If it's going to cost us $2 per acre and we get $2 back, or $1.90, we don't qualify that as a good investment, and rightfully so. That's like putting money in a bank, right, and getting negative interest. It's costing you money to store it there, instead of you gaining interest and your money growing. But there's another aspect of ROI. The example I just gave with the fungicide is what the business community will call direct ROI. You do something, you spend a certain amount of dollars, you spend X, you get Y back. And that's how you make your determination. If there's not enough Y, you do not do that, make that business decision, you don't spend X. All right, if that makes sense. But within the business community, and the auto industry is big on this, it's called indirect ROI. So in essence, is that you listen to Idle Chatter podcast. So you take an hour of your time and you listen to Idle Chatter podcast, and you hopefully learn something that brings efficiencies to your farm shop, or today hopefully teaches you how to make your non-essential equipment last longer. That's indirect ROI. So, or you spent time to listen to me, and let's say that arguably you had to you spent a dollar to listen to me, right? Which is not the case, but you spent a dollar to listen to me. Well, that dollar indirectly, or that time that you invested, is going to bring value to you, but it's not direct. It's not fungicide bushels. It's learning about things. It's a thought process. It's an action that will allow you to maximize your profits and keep more of your profits. So the car business is big about indirect ROI, and indirect ROI is building what they would call a halo vehicle. Like Ford built the GT supercar, right? $600,000 car. That's a halo vehicle. They're losing money on every one of those cars at $600,000. But what they're basically doing is they're building a halo around the brand. It's indirect ROI. I tell you to go to the Agro Expo. You go to the Agro Expo and you learn something about fertility. You learn something about setting your sprayer more accurately. You learn something about transition of your farm that down the road saves your family $500,000. That's indirect ROI. And what we need to understand is that many businesses spend a lot of time and a lot of effort recognizing indirect ROI, whereas the agricultural community basically talks all the time about ROI, very important, not downplaying it, but you could have a very high ROI and have a very poor indirect ROI, and that indirect ROI will actually suck the profits out of your ROI. So now we got all these acronyms, right? We're driving you nuts, but hopefully you can follow me on this. So what I'm going to basically do is I'm going to ask you to entertain what I'm going to say for the rest of this show. We're a little bit more than 20 minutes into it, so for the next 35 or 40 minutes, I'm going to ask you to be open-minded. You may not agree with everything I'm saying, and everybody's life, everybody's farm, everybody's operation is a little bit different, all right? And everybody has a slightly different thought process. So I'm asking you only to entertain what I am about to say, but I'm asking you also not to just poo-poo it. In engineering, we call that NIH, not invented here, because it's against what you thought or against what you think, or you didn't think of it that you throw it out the window. Don't poo-poo this. Mull it over in your mind, give it some thought, and then modify it to work for you. But I think that if you could give me the next 35 or 40 minutes, I hope to make a compelling case for you to understand what you need to do as far as non-essential, essential equipment, and why it's so imperative to your farm's success and your profits to make it last as long as possible. So as I was saying a minute ago, look, I'm an engine guy, I'm a machinery guy. I love, there's nothing not to like about new equipment, all right? And, you know, and for instance, like Jeff Kerfoot, who's, I know he's a listener of the podcast, and we haven't physically met, but I read his tweets, and just seems like a real great down-to-earth guy. And to tell you the truth, if he was not up in Canada and I was in New Jersey, he'd probably be my equipment salesperson. So using Jeff, and he works for Rocky Mountain Equipment. I don't know what branch. I know that they're quite a large dealership group, and he's blue. He's New Holland, which we farm blue. And but I do have to say something about New Holland. The other day I was getting my tractor ready for harvest, and I wanted to put a new battery in it and before harvest, because it's 6 or 7 years old. And then I took it from the shed and brought it up to work on it, and I shut it off, and the battery died. So I said, all right, well, I didn't plan on going and getting a battery for it today. Battery for it today. But I will, might as well better now than in harvest, right? And the hold down was starting to deteriorate from the acid. The acid fumes that leak from the battery from the vents. So I went to the oldest New Holland dealer in the country, supposedly Smith Motors in Washington, New Jersey. And I called up, they had a battery for me. I went down there, I said, I want to get a hold down. And this is, sorry, Jeff, there's no disrespect to you and Rocky Mountain Equipment. The New Holland deal, I farm blue, love it. Been great, and but I'll tell you one thing: those prices are dear. A piece of bent angle iron, all right, with two holes drilled in it for the battery hold down, $67. I mean, I'm not the type of person that's looking for something for nothing. I want people to make money, all right. I want people to make money. I want the money makes the world go round, all right. The thing basically, but you know, everything I buy for that tractor is so expensive, and then you know you could go to John Deere and it's like one third the cost. All right, the only thing I can say is that the tractor has been extremely, extremely reliable, and I have all New Holland equipment, and it's been extremely reliable. All right, they put $0 in it, but when you do buy something, it's dear. The only good thing I could say about the hold down is that they got it for me the next day, which they're excellent with that, and it was made in USA, and it was either painted or powder coated very nicely. But 67, and I'm talking about just the bar. I'm not talking about the J hooks that hold the battery down. But anyway. So, you know, as a salesman, and I am speaking from my heart because I sincerely believe, even though, as I said, Jeff and I did not meet, that I could read his tweets and read what he does, and we've communicated a little bit, and I know that he is for his customers, that he wants his customers to be successful, and he wants to sell them to Rocky Mountain Equipment what is going to be best for their operation and not necessarily best for him today. And that is the key to a good ag equipment or any type of equipment salesman. Don't sell them something to make a sale. You sell them something what's best for your customer, because if your customer does well, over time you will do well. So I know Jeff would love to sell everybody a new tractor. I don't blame him. I know every farmer would love to have the latest, greatest bells and whistle tractor, right? But the thing basically is that if you were to look at it, is the tractor truly what makes you money on your farm, or is it just a workhorse? And you'd have to say that the tractor is pulling an implement, be it a planter, be it a cultivator, be it whatever, all right? It could be a baler, but that's not really where the rubber meets the road. Where you make your money is in the piece of equipment, or through the piece of equipment, not in that tractor is pulling. So the thing basically is, to me, a tractor is certainly an essential piece of equipment. So I don't want to say a non-essential, essential piece of equipment. But if I were looking to invest money in something new, I would, and this is my opinion, I could say feel free to shoot holes in it, and I'll probably get nasty emails from Rocky Mountain Equipment or any other equipment dealer, is that I would rather have that, take care of that tractor, buy it new so it's virgin when you get it, yours, then you could take care of it properly, buy it new, and then take excellent, extraordinary care of it, and get 20 years out of it, and use that savings of that money from having to roll over that tractor every few years and buy something new for six figures, and use that to go to your equipment dealer and invest in the latest in technology, in the planter, in the sprayer, in the combine, the actual piece of equipment that is going to bring you the profit center on your farm, which is the crop. You know, and then I learned this as a young man. When I got out of college, I worked for Allen Test Products, an oscilloscope and equipment analyzer company, and I traveled all around the state of New Jersey doing technical demonstrations of equipment and training. And you know, you go to a business, right? You go to a business, and you know that the scriptures tell us that. They tell us that in a different way, that they, you know, they say the eyes are a lantern to the soul, and a modern day or a modern version of the scriptures of saying, and I don't mean to paraphrase the word of God incorrectly, but you know, where your checkbook is, where your money is where your heart is. And the Bible says that in a different way. But that's really what it's saying. So, you know, I would go to a shop, to a salesman would line up a demonstration. I'd go to a shop, and then the guy's got a beautiful new, at the time, there wasn't all these fancy trucks, people were buying luxury cars. Beautiful new Cadillac, top of the line Cadillac, a Lincoln out there, right? Gorgeous, brand new, at the time maybe a $20,000 car, which was, back then was a lot of money in the 80s, right? Top of the line Lincoln or Eldorado or whatever the heck it was, right? Gorgeous, I mean, drop dead gorgeous, you can't argue, deny that. Or a brand new Vet there or something, or a Trans Am or whatever it was, right? Expensive car. And then you go into the guy's shop, and he's got the crappiest, cheapest tire changing machine. He's got the cheapest torque wrench. He's got the lift is cockeyed. All right, everything else in the shop is Mickey Mouse. Where is his heart? Where is his mindset? His mindset is he's looking at his business to ride around in the Cadillac. He's not looking at his business, and he's over there working with the wrong size wrench and rounding off the guy's bolt. And he's ended up doing a crappy job on his customer's vehicles, and that particular car's bringing to be repaired, doesn't have the right equipment, and doing things or very poor equipment, cheap, old, worn-out equipment, but there's a brand-new caddy sitting outside. Where is his heart? His heart is not in his business. His heart is not to do the best job he possibly can. And, you know, I'll be as bold to say, because I'm not politically correct, and if you listen to me, you know, I go to stuff, and I'm, look, I'm not knocking anyone. You do what you want with your money. But you'll have a person who will buy a $190,000 pickup truck, all right, which is not going to make him a nickel, $90,000 pickup truck, and then you go over to his farm shop, right, and the equipment is in disrepair or the equipment is old or what have you. And I don't mean to step on anybody's toes, and I'm hopefully not insulting anybody, but I'm going to tough love you. I'm going to tell you the real deal. I'm not going to tell you. So, or the guy's going to scrimp on the cheapest hybrid that he's going to plant, right? Or he's going to scrimp on fertility. Or he says, I'm not going to put a cover crop in because it's going to cost me X amount of dollars. And I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this. But here's my $100,000 pickup truck, right? And I have, and I'm not going to say never, but I cannot recall a business that had that thought process and ended up over time being successful and staying in business. Yeah, they may be successful when times are good because that thought process got absorbed by the good times. And like I said, I don't care whether it's farming or auto repair or diner or manufacturing facility, but when the times get tight or things don't go as well as they should, then that's where that weak link, that Achilles heel in that thought process becomes very, very, very apparent, and they usually do not survive. So one of my epistles for today on this show is to say to you is that I believe in buying a new tractor when you can afford it, buying a new tractor, taking meticulous care of that tractor, and then so it would last you 10, 15, 20, 30 years, all right? Yes, it may not have some of the latest bells and whistles. I don't believe in buying junk and trying to farm with junk or run any business with junk. I don't care what it is. We're talking agriculture here, but all right, to believe any business with junk, and then buy new, take care of it, and then the cost and efficiency savings that you glean from that, you take and roll back into your business by, as far as the machinery is concerned, by having the latest technology in your planter, the latest technology in your combine, so you have the cleanest, the best grain, the minimized grain loss, all right, and the great and the best technology in your sprayer, and then out of the machinery shed in your fertility, in your hybrid or an irrigation system, whatever it may be, a center pivot. But if you look at the tractor as a power source, all right, it becomes a non-essential piece of machinery. So you want to be able to have to get as much life out of that, to be able to amortize the cost of that machine, and then use those savings by putting into a product and implement a tool that will help you generate more income for what your core business is. Let's say growing sweet corn. My tractor is a 2002. Bought it new. It gets waxed. It gets washed. It has the best fluids in it, synthetic oil, New Holland parts, everything in it, meticulously maintained. Not because it's mine, meticulously maintained, all right? But my planter is brand new, well, 2016. And that's got all the stuff on it that's going to make my crop grow. Got copperhead ag furrow cruiser closing wheels. It's got double disc. It's got double disc two by two openers, double disc seed trench openers, Keaton seed firmers, precision planting stuff on it. All right, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's what's going to make me a crop. You know, having a planter with no technology in it and pulling it with a beautiful tractor, not that mine isn't beautiful, I do love it, but it's beautiful in my eyes, probably not in yours, but that's, you know, buying a brand new tractor and pulling an old planter is not going to make the Bohex farm successful, and neither will it be yours. Now, you could carry that to extremes. I'm not saying that you farm with a 1972 tractor, all right? But the thing is that the whole idea here is the goal is to take that investment in that non-essential, essential machine and be able to expand its useful life. And by expanding its useful life, then you will be able to take those, instead of in reinvesting in another one of those non-essential essentials, you will be able to put that money anyplace else in your farm operation, and it may not, it may be in the bank, or it may be to pay down debt, or it may be to expand your operation and pick up new grounds. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's not going to be put and wasted in a non-essential essential machine that had that died a premature death because of a poor mindset. Alrighty, so now what I'm going to do is I am going to use a pickup truck as an example. A pickup truck is, to me, you could argue with it, is a non-essential essential piece of equipment. So we're going to talk about a pickup truck. The first thing that I will say to you, and remember, I'm the hot rod farmer. I love engines. I'm a successful farming engine man in the magazine and on TV. So this is coming from an engine guy, all right? This is coming from a guy who loves machinery, loves cars, loves trucks, loves everything with a motor. But the thing basically is that why do so many farmers buy a diesel pickup truck? I pause there, to, the recording didn't go bad, for you to think. And I know I'm ruffling a lot of feathers with this podcast today. But why are you buying? Look, I love them. The new diesels are gorgeous. They got 900 pounds-feet of torque. They're monsters. I'm not going to deny that, all right? But a diesel in a pickup truck is going to cost you approximately, I don't care what brand it is, $10,000 more than a comparable truck with a gas engine in it. And all the companies have excellent gas engines in it today. And Ford is coming out for 2020. Oh, that sounds like a TV show, right? Or I test 2020. Coming out with that new, I think they call it Godzilla 7.3 gas V8. That's got a torque curve, 475 foot-pounds, flattest friggin' eastern Nebraska. All right? So the thing is that, does it have 900 foot-pounds like the Powerstroke diesel, or like a Duramax or Cummins? It got right the Ram has got the 1,000 foot-pounds, or pounds-feet is actually the proper way to say it, of torque. No, it does not, all right? It does not, but today's transmission, today's torque converter, and today's gearing and engine control systems will allow the engine, the gasoline engine, to have a very flat torque curve, all right? Will it pull the load up the hill as fast or as quickly as the diesel? No, it will not. But you're not in the trucking business, all right? You're not pulling cross country and say, man, you know, like Werner Express. We say, if I get, you know, it takes me, if I got going from New Jersey to California, if I get over the Rocky Mountains a half hour quicker each time, and it makes money. It's not. So we're pulling a load of fertilizer from town. We're moving some cattle. We're moving a piece of equipment to another field. We're moving a combine header, right? If we got there 5 minutes later because we ran a gas truck instead of a diesel, and I'm not against diesel, all right, but I'm against the $10,000 that it costs to put that diesel in that truck. I'm against the additional maintenance that diesel needs. They're very maintenance intensive today with the light duty diesels. I'm against the complexity of that. I'm against the having to deal with regen cycles, diesel exhaust fluid, and all of that. Right, I'm against the amount of that, the cost of when I dump the oil on it, that's got two times the amount of oil. I'm against the fact that it's got two times the amount of coolant in it. I'm against the fact that you open the hood and there's more components on it, more things, more possible areas. Plus, I'm against the $10,000. I would rather three times a year go up the hill slower, 5 miles per hour slower, and save the initial $10,000 cost on that truck, and then also have a reduced CPM, cost per mile, as far as the maintenance is concerned, and potential future repairs. I said this before on the show. You don't additize the fuel on the diesel today? Forget about it. I don't care. At one particular point in the first 150,000 miles, you're spending $8,000, $6,000 to $8,000 for new injectors. All right, you may go 150,000 miles before it happens. You may go 100,000 miles. You may go 90,000 miles, but you're spending it. Just put it away, because that's going to happen if you don't have a properly additized fuel with a lubricity additive in it. All right, so that's what I'm against. So now, carrying that theme further, I don't care whether you buy gas or diesel. All right, the average pickup truck that most farmers buy, according to industry data, retails for about $60,000. So that retails for about $60,000, and I think we could all attest that. So let's use that number for easy arithmetic. And like I said, this has nothing to do with gas or diesel. This has to do with the price of the truck. All right? So now, let's say that you put 20,000 miles a year on that truck. That's 400 miles a week. Some guys in agriculture put more, some put less. The majority put less than 20,000 miles a year. But let's say that you run 20,000 miles a year. All right? So we're going to try to hit it in the middle. And you buy that truck for $60,000. I don't care whether it's finance, you write a check for whatever you do. Your grandmother buys it for you. Right? The thing basically is that, and in 5 years, you have 100,000 miles on that truck. And you did not listen to me and you took okay care of it, but you didn't take meticulous care of it, all right? And in 5 years, 100,000 miles, that truck is now becoming problematic. So now what you're going to look to do is you're going to replace that truck. Now you could sometimes take that truck, like most farmers do, and put it further down the food chain and use it for whatever, for something else, but you're still going to town and spending another $60,000 for a new one after 5 years. So that means, if you do the math, all right, that truck is costing you, without maintenance, fuel, anything, which is amortizing the $60,000, $12,000 per year to own that truck. 5 times 12 is 60, where I went to school, all right? And if you put 20,000 miles on that truck, 400 miles a week, that truck is costing you at 100,000 miles, 60 cents a mile to drive it. All right, 60 cents a mile to drive it. So that's you're taking the $12,000 a year and dividing 20,000 miles per year by 12,000, you're coming up with that, all right? If you were to now make that truck last 7 years, which now would have 140,000 miles on it, that cost per mile for ownership, not maintenance, just to own it, all right, to own it, is 43 cents a mile. So now we have quite a bit of a savings there by making the truck last 2 more years. So now we take that truck and we go from 7 years and we make it last 10 years. So now that truck has 200,000 miles on it. Your cost per mile for ownership, and as an aside to this, let me put it this way, there's no reason why any vehicle today, gas, diesel, car, truck, minivan, you can't get 200,000, 250,000 miles on a minimal care. I had a Ford Escort with 450,000 miles. My Ford Fiesta is a couple of years old. I got 151,000 miles on it. Didn't put a nickel into it. I put brakes in it. And I put a headlight bulb, and the blower resist low speed went out on the fan, so I lost low speed, so it was $17 for the resistor, all right? So now you take that truck, and you keep it 10 years for 200,000 miles, and now your cost per mile for ownership for just the 60,000, I keep repeating it, is 30 cents per mile. You keep that truck for 12 years, it has 240,000 miles on it. It's time to do something, get rid of it, give it away, make it a barn truck, what have you. And your cost per the $60,000 has dropped down to 25 cents per mile. So now, if you were to keep the truck 12 years, and it's a $60,000 truck, if you were to buy a new truck every 5 years, all right, by year 10, you would have bought two trucks. Year 0 to 5, 60,000. Year 0 5 to 10 is 20,000. All right. If you were to keep that truck 12 years, as I was saying, all right, you would have been on your third truck. So let's say Farmer A buys his truck for $60,000 and he keeps it 12 years. Farmer B buys a truck for $60,000 every 5 years. By the time Farmer A and Farmer B got to the 12-year mark, Farmer A only invested $60,000 and he got 12 years worth of use out of that truck. Farmer B is on his third truck, so he's invested now $180,000, all right, and he's accomplishing no more than Farmer A, who spent $60,000. So by making that truck last 12 years, non-essential, essential piece of equipment, we need a truck on the farm. I'm not denying that, all right? We need a reliable truck on the farm. By making that truck last 12 years, instead of Farmer B, who every 5 years, he runs the goddamn thing into the ground, which I've seen. I go to farm meetings, I see some $80,000 pickup trucks that are 3 or 4 years old that look pretty sad, and more importantly, sound sad when you start them. All right? All right. Farmer A saved $120,000. That's quite a bit of money. So now let's say, so you say, well, you're full of crap, Hot Rod Farmer, because that guy had to put some money in repairs, and in 5 years, I don't put that money in repairs. Fine, I agree with you, all right? So the first 100,000 miles, you don't put much money into it, and then it goes exponentially, may go more. So let's say that Farmer A put $10,000 into repairs over the 240, two or three sets of tires, brakes, maybe an alternator, who knows, maybe something else, right? $10,000. He's still ahead of the game, $110,000, no matter how you slice it. $110,000, all right? And then if you have three trucks on your operation, and you have a size of operating three trucks, then you have the potential savings, all right, of $110,000, because you put $10,000 in repairs, all right, three trucks is $330,000, all right? $330,000. Now, you could say, well, you know, I could write that off and everything. Yeah, but it gets back to non-essential essentials. All right? Yes, you could write it off also by going to Jeff Kerfoot and buying a new planter. You have the same write-off and putting technology in a planter, or buying a new sprayer, or buying a new combine. The government doesn't care what the write-off is from. All right, but now you have spent $330,000 less over the course of 12 years. You weren't walking to town, you weren't walking to church, you weren't walking to the fertilizer store, you weren't walking to the growers meeting, all right? You did that by taking care and expanding the life cycle of a pickup truck on your farm, all right? Now, let's add something else to it. You took my advice, which my wife doesn't, so hopefully you do. You took my advice, and you have these three trucks in your farm, right? And you went and you bought gas instead of diesel. Now, all I'm talking about is the $10,000 difference. I'm not trying to figure out or calculate the difference with the maintenance, the oil, the DEF fluid, the regen cycles. Well, forget about that. Here's the $10,000, right? So, if you saved $10,000, all right, if Farmer A bought three new trucks, he has them last 10 years. Farmer B, by year 12, is on his third new truck, right? And you save $10,000 by going from diesel to gas, all right? Farmer A, right, would have saved, invested $90,000 less than Farmer B, because he bought three new trucks, he kept them 12 years. Farmer B bought three trucks, every 5 years bought new, and bought diesel. Alright, so it's 3 times 3 is 9 times 10, that's $90,000. You add that to the $330,000, and Farmer A, over the course of 12 years, did everything that Farmer B did with his truck, and he saved $420,000. And you could argue this, but it's real. Figure it out yourself. And I'm not talking, like I said, I'm repeating it. I'm not talking again about the savings in oil or what have you. $420,000. Now, you could go over to Jeff at Rocky Mountain Equipment and say, Jeff, over the past 12 years, I saved $420,000 because I listened to that guy with the funny accent from New Jersey. All right? I did everything I needed to do. I invested that $420,000 and it turned into $500,000, and my combine is older and has old technology, and I really love that twin rotor combine, and I really love the cleaning ability of it, and that new corn head or whatever it may be, a new sprayer, whatever it is. I'm just being facetious here, all right? And the thing is that I got a check for $500,000. Well, I want to take that thing home with me. Isn't that a smarter way to run your business? Instead of paying, going to town and going to churches, hey, look at Joe over there. He got the new diesel, 1,000 pounds for you to talk, right? Yeah, that's great if it makes you money. Non-essential, essential equipment. And if you take that mindset, and you take it and spread it about all of your machinery, right? You need a UTV to get around your operation. Buy a new one. Buy a gas one, right? Buy a gas one, or buy a diesel, whatever the heck you want. Buy it, meticulously take care of it, maintain it. And when I brought my tractor to the farm, I said to my wife, this tractor has to last me 25 to 30 years. And it's 17 years old now, and I'm on track for that. It could blow up tomorrow, all right? But the thing basically is I'm on track for that. My goal is to make that last that long. Now, I'm not saying you're farming 10,000 acres, you're going to make a tractor last 25 or 30 years. But if you could double from 5 years to 10 years, or from 10 years to 20 years, all right? I live in Realville. I'm not expecting you to farm with a 25 or 30-year-old tractor, but I'm not expecting you to turn it over every couple of years for the latest technology. I know some guys may say to me, well, we lease them and we write them off. And if that works for your business model, that's great. And we put no money into them. But most people do not do that way. But I'm trying to say non-essential, essential equipment. So how do you make non-essential, essential equipment last for a long amount of time? Take that money and roll that money into something that is going to make you money on your farm, increase your yield, increase your harvest speed, decrease your chemical use, whatever it may be, better seed population, better emergence, what have you, right? Better fertility, better hybrid. I'll go through this quickly. Wash the darn thing and wash it underneath. You don't want it to rust, all right? Get the dirt out of it, all right? Get the dirt out of it. I've said this many times on the show, open the hood. You buy a new piece of equipment today, you want to keep it 10 or 20 years, all right? The heat soak, everything, all the electronics, the hoses, the belts, the gaskets. And when you're done working it, whether it's for an hour, whether it's for 2 hours, whether it's at the end of the day, open the hood and leave and let the heat out. Those parts will last exponentially longer and be more reliable. All right? You cook that alternator, it's the components are going to decrease in life. Gaskets, sensors, ECU, whatever it may be. All right? Use factory parts. Be meticulous with your maintenance, right? Use the proper filters. Use factory filters. Use the proper oil, all right? Service the AC. I've talked about this in all different shows. I'm not going to go around it forever. Service the AC. I'd rather spend $200 servicing the AC at the dealership, or if you don't have an AC station, and not spend $5,000 to fix the AC, all right? Service the transmission and differential, all right? Go underneath the piece of machine in winter, snug stuff up, put a wrench on it, look at it, put eyeballs on it. You'd go in your field with a sweep net to look for insects, but people don't look at, they're afraid to crawl underneath the machine. Say, let me put a bolt, I'll run a wrench in here, see if it's tight, let me see what's going on over here, all right? change the brake fluid, all right, if applicable, all right? Change the brake fluid. And all of this comes to whether it's a car, truck, ATV, UTV, whatever. The whole thing basically is the point I'm trying to drive home here is if we could focus, and that's, and I'm going to close here and go to special delivery. If we could focus on taking our non-essential equipment and looking to between 50 to adding 50 to 100% service life to it, we can then take those resources and put them on our farm or ranch operation where they are going to give us a true ROI, a return on the investment, and not just replace a piece of equipment because we did not maximize its service life. So hopefully you understand what I'm saying here. If not, you want to rebut me, you want to yell at me, hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com is how you get a hold of me, and you could yell at me and tell me I'm all wet. But, hey, I made a lot of money with my Ford Escort, 448,000 miles. I would go on the road, did 3,500 magazine stories, did seminars, what have you, and I would have made that. I would not have made a nickel more. If I went and did a seminar, I wouldn't get paid a nickel more if I came in a $40,000 car than my Escort. The thing was I had to make it reliable to get there, and it did, and the same thing with my Fiesta. And the same thing with my Ranger, the same thing with my tractor, the same thing with everything we have here in the farm. So now special delivery is brought to you by Firestone Ag, a company founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today. And it lives on. Harvey's long gone, but that mindset lives on with their 23 degree tread to bar design, AD2 technology, advanced deflection 2, the IF and VF tires, the Firestone of replacement tracks, and their new Evo series of radial tires. All right? So the soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. And I thank Firestone for allowing me to bring this special delivery segment to you. So this is a letter from somebody from Fran, and it says, "Hi, I just got a 2019 Ram 2500 yesterday and have what is probably a stupid question." Well, there's no question it's stupid. Every teacher tells you that, right? "The engine has 5 hours total on it when it was delivered. I've heard you have to break in a new diesel engine using various methods, and I've also heard breaking in a new engine is an old wives' tale. Do you have any advice?" Yes, and this stands for gas or diesel. Very, very simple. I don't understand why you got 5 hours of running. You didn't tell me how much mileage on it. So, but that's at this particular point. It's not the end of the world. It's brand new. What you want to do is you want to limit idling. And that's for the life of the vehicle. You want to limit short duty cycles, short trips. I mean, if you have to do a short trip, that's what you bought the truck for. But you want to limit short trips. You want to limit idling. You do not want to warm it up. But the most important thing that you need to do, and this is going to fly in contrast to anybody that's listening to me that doesn't know engines, but we do that we build an engine on a dyno, all right? You want to take that vehicle, gas, diesel, car, truck. You want to, within the first couple, you could do it within the first 10 miles or 20 miles. You want to get on the highway someplace. You want to pull on the side of the road, all right? When it's safe and you're not going to get a ticket, depending where you are, what you want to do is you want to roll out onto your start. You want to start to accelerate. You don't want to come out of the hole with the tires smoking and fishtailing, what have you, and you want to whack that thing. You want to roll it out the first gear when you feel that it's got enough momentum. You whack that thing and you mat it and you let it bang the gears at redline. Let the boost come up, all right? And you bang the gears and get up to about 75, 80 miles an hour and release the throttle, right? You should do that at least once, and then you could do it twice. All right, and what that's going to do is it's going to seal the rings very quickly, and you're going to have a runner. Every car, every engine that we did that to, the thing ran, and it ran forever. All right, I could do a whole podcast on why. It has to do with the temperature of the way the ring is going against the cylinder wall, but that's a lot of physics there. But anyway, you whack that thing, all right? You do it once, possibly twice. You could do it 10 miles on the thing, basically. It's got to be warm. fully operating temperature. Change the oil about the first 2,000 to 2,500 miles. Then go to your normal maintenance schedule. The reason why you're changing the oil is you want to get all the manufacturing debris out of the oil pan. Today's engines are cleaner than they were years ago. And then just go to your normal maintenance schedule and drive it and do and use it. Pull a trailer, do whatever you got with it, and do everything that I said in the other part of this show. Take care of it, service it, and it's not only going to be a runner, it's going to last much longer. And if you do it that way, because the owner's manual is not going to tell you that in a litigious society, but that's what the engine guys do. We put them on a dyno, we warm them up, we make a couple little pulls, and then we let that sucker rip, baby. All it is, you do two, it's called sealing the engine up. So if you have any questions on that or anybody else, please feel free to call me, and you could shoot arrows at me all you want, but that works. And I could, if I ever meet you, I'll explain to you the mechanical engineering behind it. Listen, thanks so much for listening. I went long as usual. I want to thank you, and I want you to know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, my beloved America. See you next week, and have a great, great week.